Hi, this is Dan. Welcome back to Desertification Island. This is Volume 6, and I was joined by Hannah Pang from Futera. Really interesting discussion, looking at sustainability from a comms perspective, looking at sustainability in the fashion industry, and rather interestingly, looking at sustainability from this kind of more spiritual perspective. Some amazing song choices. It's a great session, about 40 minutes long. Enjoy, and see you soon. Bye. I'm absolutely delighted to be joined today by Hannah Pang. Hi, Hannah. How are you doing?
Hello. I'm well, thanks. And just for the record, it's pronounced Pang, but I do answer to Pang.
Excuse me. Hannah Pang. Let's start again. Okay. Let's re-record it. Let's start again.
No, it's all good. Honestly, some of my friends call me like Fanger, so it's become a nickname now.
Okay. Hannah Pang. We'll go with that one. Won't get it wrong again. Not before.
No, all good.
So yeah, first of all, thanks for joining us. It's great to see you. Great to meet you. First time meeting you.
Nice to meet you as well. Thanks for having me on.
And yeah, we're just crazy background given the theme of today that you've ended up in space, which is an interesting place to be.
Yes.
In the desertified island that we find ourselves on now.
Exactly. I mean, desertified island of island Earth, spaceship Earth.
That's right. So Hannah, you currently work with Futera, heading up marketing, kind of marketing and advocacy, I think is in the job title. So what does that kind of entail on a day-to-day basis at the moment?
Yeah, tough one to answer, and probably I could spend all day just talking about the many hats that I wear, but I guess, is it okay if I start with a bit about Futera and what we do? That'll probably help me explain a little bit more. Yeah, sure. Exactly. So Futera is an agency. We operate like an agency. We call ourselves a change agency, and that we're in the business of creating positive change. And the way that we do that is through logic and magic is kind of our formula. So half of our office operates like a sustainability consultancy. So we have quite technical sustainability experts who support our clients in creating their sustainability strategies. So that's the big vision of where they want to go with sustainability. What are the roadmaps to get there? What are the targets and commitments that'll help support them on their way and have check-in points to make sure that they are doing what they say they're going to be doing? And then we have the magic side of things where the other half of our office operates like a creative agency. So we have designers and copywriters and creative directors, and they really focus on bringing sustainability to life in a way that's really engaging and exciting. And that's the formula that we've put together, because often we found if you're only doing the logic side of things, then often sustainability gets trapped in a CSR report that no one ever looks at. And if you're only doing the magic side of things without having kind of the rigorous strategy to back it up, you're probably greenwashing. So we put the two things together all under one roof. So we all kind of speak the sustainability and creative language so that for our clients, we're helping them unlock both the business and the brand value. And in terms of the types of projects that we work on, we work across sectors. So lots of work in fashion and food. So some of our clients include Cause and Caring and YNAP. We just launched YNAP strategy this past year, as well as Tommy Hilfiger's, which was very exciting. Do a lot of work in food. We're doing a ton of work at the moment in tech, quite a bit in kind of media and entertainment as well. So we kind of work across the board, across sector, which is very exciting, kind of keeps us on our toes and gives us a good bird's eye view of what's happening in sustainability more broadly. And we've been around for 20 years now. So started 20 years ago, and we've always had the mission to make sustainability so desirable it becomes normal. And even thinking back 20 years ago, sustainability was not like a cool thing at all. No one was really focusing on it. So I think our two co-founders had a lot of foresight in that saving the world was actually quite a good business model.
Yeah, it was a slow burner, I think they'll say. I remember meeting someone from Futera probably like must have been late kind of 2000s and chatting through then. And it's I guess it'd be interesting to hear your thoughts on kind of the progression over the last, what it feels like, I don't know, is it a month or two? It's almost like the craziest 2 months I've ever had in working in sustainability, I think. And
totally.
Like your founder, like Solitaire, I've been doing this for about 20 years. And it was hard graft, you know, early days trying to convince people that sustainability is just a better business plan. You know, like that really, that's what it comes down to, right?
Yeah, for sure. I would love to talk about that. And even so, I've been with the company I've been in our London office for 3 years now, and I was with our New York office for about a year and a half before that. And even within kind of my shorter career in sustainability, to see how much it's changed and how the pace of it has just ramped up so quickly, as you say, even in the last couple of months, has been, pretty wild.
Yeah. I think this is often what happens when the financial services sector gets its hands around something as well, when the money starts talking.
Exactly. Capitalism, we still exist in that system. So as much as we can kind of leverage it and use it while we can, where the money goes.
But I think, that ultimately that's the key, isn't it? Sustainability for me has always been that, it's that balance between the environment, society, social kind of issues, and economic development, right? And as long as this kind of stakeholder capitalism is responsible moving forward, then at least we are progressing and we're evolving, right?
Exactly. Yeah, and it's a step-by-step thing. It's not like we can kind of wipe the slate clean of the world and start fresh. We have to be building on everything that has been built so far. And I think that's part of the reason why Futura does work with some of the biggest brands and companies in the world, because they're not going away anytime soon. Yeah. If we can support them in becoming more sustainable and regenerative businesses, then the better for everyone.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's what do you think the kind of is there a change in kind of track now in terms of from the comms side around sustainability? Because I know I've always felt that there's been a lot of negative focus around, like, the world's going to die, we're all going to die if we don't do something. So I've always kind of had this philosophy around improvement and saying to people, no, look, there's just a better way to do this. Come on board and work. And it feels to me like that's part of one of the successes now, is a move away from doomsaying and more towards motivation. What are you finding in terms of, like, those relationships, those big companies in that area?
Yeah, definitely. I think, I guess I'll kind of start by answering your first question in terms of what my role is at Futura. Okay. So I don't actually work on our client things a ton. I kind of dabble in client work, but I mostly work on Futura as a brand. How are we using our voice and our platform? How can we create tools and resources that are just helpful for our clients more broadly and for the industry more broadly? So in terms of what Futura's kind of ethos is and how we approach these types of things, I think going back to your later question about the role of communication, that's really why we do have the logic and magic bit, because the creativity and the storytelling is such a crucial part of getting people on board. So similar to logic and magic, we often talk about footprint versus brain print. So you have to address the kind of footprint of the company, understanding what is their actual material impact and how can we make that less bad and better, and then hopefully be regenerative where it's actually solving problems rather than creating them. And then on the brain print side of things, it's really looking at, okay, what's the influence that you have? What are the messages that you're putting out there that help create some of the cultural norms? I think because we work with some of the world's biggest brands and businesses, that brain print piece is so crucial to the work that we do. So I think a really good example of this is our work that we did with Formula One. So we launched their sustainability strategy. It was December of 2019. And it was an incredible strategy, especially for motorsports, which you probably would not think it could be a sustainability leader, but that was actually a really exciting challenge for us. So we built out this really comprehensive, rigorous strategy for them. But through understanding them as a company and doing their carbon footprint, we learned that the cars themselves are only 0.7% of the footprint of the company. So it's pretty close to nothing, the cars themselves and the impact that they have. But they're actually like 100% of the brain print. Like, that's what people are looking at. So a Formula One fan isn't thinking about the impact of the events that go on. They're not thinking about the impact of transporting these cars around the world. So we still had to obviously do that in the strategy and help them think through how they're going to improve that footprint side of things. But in terms of the brain print, we had to get them to do something about the cars themselves. So the thing that made headlines was their overall net zero commitment, which is incredibly exciting for any company, but especially for one like motorsports, but also deploying hybrid technology technologies and zero carbon sustainable fuels in their cars as well, because that's what people are going to be drawn to. That's what sets the new norms and expectations for industries and for sports in general, looking at, okay, what are the things that people are paying attention to? How can we start to shift the conversation on those things so that it's, yeah, we're going where people are interested in. And I think to your point, as well, focusing on the solution side of things, not always just kind of weighing people down with the problems and the doom and gloom. Of course, it's incredibly important to understand the problems and know the facts and know what's going on. But it can also be like, I mean, pretty depressing. So how can we make it, one, accessible so that people actually understand, so that you don't need a degree in sustainability to understand, you know, what's going on and why it's important. But also, like, how can we make it fun and something that people want to engage with, so that it's not about sacrifice, but it's about feeling empowered in your choices and your decisions and your impact. So that was kind of a long-winded answer for your question.
No, it's a great. I'm a huge Formula One fan. So that's all good. But I guess with Formula One, it's in, you know, there's been the carbon issue, but then there's been a lot around kind of the diversity and inclusion side of things as well, which there's kind of a lot of proactivity around, it seemed to me, looking kind of from obviously from where I'm sitting.
There's
this broader agenda, isn't there, as well, that we're seeing these two huge issues kind of finally get huge attention, which is that the diversity and inclusion and net zero and climate, all kind of the two biggest things, probably. Other, if COVID wasn't here, they would be number one and number two, or yeah, two one, right? So whichever way you want to look at it, and that's kind of, it's really simplified it in many ways for people, I think, to get their heads around these two big things that they need to sort out and put better processes and procedures around. But then you've also got people like Lewis Hamilton being real ambassadors for it, and he just started up an electric kind of team as well. There's this other, not Formula E, but there's another kind of thing that Jensen Button's also doing, which are all electric cars. So it kind of seems inevitable that that's the direction for F1, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I think for a lot of the companies that we work with, a lot of it is about staying relevant. So these are the topics that people care about. They want to know what you're doing as a business. And in order to continue to be around and for people to want to spend their time and money on you, you have to make sure you're keeping up with what people are interested in. And so it has a lot to do with, again, going back to the business case for it and how it just makes sense. This is what people want to know about, and you have to be engaging in these topics and taking action on them in order to keep being allowed to be around as a business or as an organization.
Absolutely. Good. One of the things you mentioned, and I know you do a lot of work in this area, is around fashion as well. And that's, you know, we do JD Sports are one of our clients, so like on the sports fashion side, but
yeah.
You know, a mega multinational, huge organization. And it's really interesting issues from a sustainability perspective. It's about all of them that you can get in one place, right? The way we buy things, the way that we make things, the way we transport things, all these things kind of together in one place. So from your work in this area, what are the kind of key issues and kind of trends around sustainability and fashion at the moment?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think to your point as well, that's probably why I personally have been so interested in the fashion industry, just because it's so complex, it's really opaque. And so if we can create solutions for the fashion industry, hopefully we'll be able to tackle anything. And also it does really speak quite well to that footprint, brain print piece to it, because there's this whole kind of behind the scenes production side of the fashion industry, but then there's the whole brain print side, which is about culture and norms and trends and desirability. So I think it is an industry that really encapsulates that. But in terms of the work that we're seeing at the moment in the fashion industry, I think it kind of goes back to what you were saying as well. It's circularity and it's inclusion. So that's been a huge piece of all of the strategies that we've made more recently for folks in the fashion industry, in addition, of course, to carbon and I guess the relationship there. But I think what we're seeing is this broader focus on both social and environmental. And I think, in my opinion, the next thing that's coming is really looking at how those things are actually interconnected and are related to one another. So the things that we are doing for circularity and for carbon, what's the impact on people for that? And the work that we're doing to kind of improve conditions, build up living wage, what's the impact that that can have on the environment as well? So I think looking more holistically at sustainability and all that that can encompass seems to be kind of where our conversations are moving. But yeah, in terms of the work that we're doing in fashion at the moment, inclusion and circularity are big ones. And I kind of think that the work around carbon now, it's like that feels more, that has to be standard now. Like that's not even like necessarily news. It's just expected that companies need to be taking as much action as they can on carbon for the climate.
Absolutely. I agree. You know, I think that was one of the themes of the recent ED event that we probably both attended a couple of weeks ago, the Sustainability Leaders Forum. And I think, you know, that is going to be a standard very soon. And people are just going to get their heads around that. But there's other kind of metrics to quantify as well, aren't there, around kind of that are really important, like we said, companies disclosing around diversity and inclusion, or companies disclosing around their water footprint, or whatever it might be. It's not going to stop at carbon.
Yeah, definitely.
Carbon's kind of a great currency, and it's what's in people's minds now. But from your perspective, how did you get into, like, have you always been interested in sustainability? Where did your kind of passion for it come from
originally? Yeah. It's something that I've tried to reflect on, but I guess I don't have kind of like one clear moment. But I grew up in Vancouver, Canada, which is a city that is like within nature. So we're really close to the beaches and water, but we have the forests and the mountains. So I just kind of grew up with just the norm that we we had this relationship with nature. And then I wanted to get into the fashion industry again for the reasons that I already mentioned. I just found it was this really fascinating and powerful industry that was also so beautiful. It was focused on art and design and self-expression. So I just kind of loved it from that perspective. So I moved to New York to go to university there, was focusing on the fashion industry. And as soon as I started working in the industry, I was like, oh wait, this isn't what it appears to be. It's not all about beautiful, about beauty. It's actually it can be quite an ugly industry that is really harmful to people and the planet. So I kind of got turned off from fashion for a bit, but that's kind of where my career started. So I shifted and started working in advertising, which was not any better, and if not, probably worse. just really focused on like trying to sell people shit that they don't need. And it just kind of became apparent to me over time that I wanted to be able to focus my time and energy doing something that felt more helpful, rather than making people feel bad about not fitting in or having to feel like they can't keep up with the trends or that they need to look a certain way in order to be accepted and loved and et cetera, et cetera. But with that, I also realized how powerful those industries are of fashion and advertising and communication. So I was trying to think through, okay, how do I put these things together? How can we use the power of advertising and communications to help make people feel good and help solve problems rather than create them? So I really didn't know what to do. So I looked at, okay, how can I learn how to put these two things together? So I ended up finding a program at the School of Visual Arts in New York. So I did their master's program called Design for Social Innovation. And that was about how do you put these two things together? So how do you use creativity and design to help address social and environmental issues? So I think that was probably my kind of kickoff for this part of my career. But I think the reason why I wanted to get into it was because I just had the experience of feeling really shitty about what I was doing and feeling like I was only contributing to a problem rather than, using this lifetime to help solve it, to start helping people. So once I did that program, and that program was focused on using human-centered design as a process to be able to understand issues and create solutions, and was also very much kind of rooted in systems thinking. So rather than looking at problems in isolation, being able to zoom out and see all the different stakeholders, all the different puzzle pieces, understanding the relationship between those bits and bobs, so that when we do create solutions, we're implementing them in a way that is really mindful of the network, of the ripple effect that that impact is going to have, rather than just kind of slapping on a band-aid to a symptom. It kind of gets you thinking about looking at a problem, understanding what the root cause of it is, and creating solutions from there, whilst also being really mindful of the impact that your solution might have on the larger network. So that's kind of a bit about the program. And after that, I, with a friend from the program, we're not sure, so we started consulting for businesses. We would run design sprints for them on how to create ideas for your social and environmental initiatives in a really rapid way. At the same time as when I started working at Futera in our New York office, and obviously I'm in our London office now, so that's a quick life story for me.
That's good. No, yeah, that's great. Well, you mentioned there's quite a few times I'm hearing mindful, be kind of awareness, and there's this kind of, I know we talk a bit about your podcast and the other things that you do, and that spirituality element. Do you think you're a yoga teacher as well? Is that right? I think.
Yes.
So do you think that helps, like, with this, because this kind of analysis of life, of process? I'm sounding quite grandiose now, but I think hopefully you know where I'm going with it. Just this appreciation of your surroundings and how things focus, right? How does that kind of interact with all this for you?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that in terms of my kind of journey and my understanding, when I was doing my yoga teacher training, that's when I started to learn a lot about spirituality and spiritual practices and mindset. And it was at the same time that I was doing this master's program. So I just kept noticing this overlap between a lot of sustainability practices and ways of thinking and approaching problems and understanding how our, I guess, world works with a lot of what I was learning within yoga and spirituality. So I think that's kind of where a lot of this has been reinforced for me, is we're often saying the same thing just in very different ways. So that's kind of where I started to pull some threads and see the commonalities between things. And I think, at least for me, and this is just my opinion, but being able to look and understand and be able to zoom out, get out of our own heads a little bit, is a really helpful way to start looking at problems and creating solutions that don't have as many negative unintended consequences.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's huge. I think that this connection between sustainability and wellness and well-being, and I think that spirituality is absolutely essential to this. And I think more than ever that speaks to people and resonates with people, I think. And
yeah, I feel like there's just this sense that, like, we're not well as individuals, like we are struggling. It's quite hard.
Yeah.
And also, like, we're not well as a society or as a world. There's so many issues and problems. And I think what I am really interested in is the relationship between those things. So how my individual wellness then is reinforced by our unsustainable systems in the world, and how those unsustainable mm-hmm. systems in the world are, negatively impacting my own wellness. So I think I'm quite fascinated and interested in exploring those relationships and dynamics between personal and individual wellness with kind of societal and environmental wellness.
And is that, do you want to talk a bit about your podcast? Because you've got your own series, which is all around this kind of concept.
Yes. Yeah, how exactly. Yeah,
so I basically wanted. Away.
Yeah. Well, I basically needed an outlet to be able to explore these things that felt, I guess, a bit more useful. So I started a podcast mostly just because I love having chats with folks and understanding different ways of thinking and exploring. So I started a podcast. I think we launched it again in December of 2019, but it's called Crystals, Clits, and Climate. And we focus on exploring those intersections between spirituality, sexuality, and sustainability. And I think for me, spirituality, I don't really consider myself to be like a super hippie person, but it's more coming from the place of just looking at like a lot of ancient wisdom and things that people have known for such a long time. I think spirituality for me is also just the acknowledgement and realization of how insane it is that we are all here and like existing in this way and in these bodies that work in a certain way. And just like the magic of nature and the planet and our solar system that we're just like hurtling through space and nothing's crashing into us is just like amazing. So there's this feeling that there's this higher energy or higher power that's helping facilitate a lot of the things that we're experiencing. And with that, that kind of leads me into sexuality and understanding our relationship to our bodies, to sexual energy and the energy of creation and how that's just so present everywhere in our world. You know, nothing exists or nothing new can like exist without sex. That's how plants are, that's how animals are, that's how we are. So connecting to that part of ourselves is something that I think is really important. And that also kind of leads me into sustainability, in that when we disconnect ourselves from that, it disconnects ourselves from nature because we're part of nature. So if we're disconnecting from that, that makes us see ourselves as something separate from nature. So it breaks our relationship to the world and to the planet. And then kind of in another lens of it, I think our some of the systems that exist in our world, so things like capitalism, things like the patriarchal system, work to disconnect us from our sexuality, because that's when we start turning inwards rather than outwards. So I don't need to buy as much stuff. I don't need to keep operating in this way that our world currently works if I feel really connected to nature and to myself and to other people, because I have validation from myself rather than from external forces. And sustainability, of course, is all the stuff that we've already been talking about. It's looking at how we exist in the current world that we live in, the structures that are in place, as well as kind of the very physical world that we live in and the kind of nature side of things, and really understanding and exploring our relationship to nature and the natural world.
Which, yeah, and you said you don't see yourself as a hippie, which I don't at all, because you haven't used the word green once in this whole other than the context of greenwashing. So it's all about sustainability and balance, right? That's what meditation, and a lot of this is about balance and energy balance.
Yeah, and being able to actually sustain ourselves.
That's a whole, we could talk about that one for an hour on its own probably. I think it's time to get into you kind of more personally as well, and now talk about the music side of things. So you had the unenviable task of choosing 7 records. There's only 7 records.
It was hard.
Yeah, it is very hard. Mine 7 change every day, I think.
Okay, good. Well, that does maybe, make me feel better.
Maybe apart from 1 or 2, but generally, like, so it'd be great just to kind of chat through those and just chat through the reasons why. Why you've chosen them as well. So
yeah.
I've got them here and I've listened to them. I think I said to you yesterday, I was listening to them while I was reading about you, and it's a good process to go through. So the first one's Perpetua Mobile, Penguin Cafe Orchestra. Now, people might not know that name, but they'll know the song, won't they?
I mean, hopefully. If not, I would definitely recommend checking it out. So I chose it for a couple of reasons. One, it's, I think, nice to have songs without words sometimes. And I think this song in particular, it feels really emotional, and it takes you on a journey in how it is like played and written. And so I think if I'm on a deserted island with no one else there, just having a way to experience a journey and to like feel it in your body and to feel like the rise and fall of emotions would be a good experience to be able to have if there's no one else around. So I just think it's a really beautiful piece of music that is very emotive and tells a story and kind of brings the listener on a journey.
Yeah, it's really well composed. It's a great, great song. And then flowing into the next one, which is very different, but amazing and amazingly catchy and a brilliant artist. So, well, Biggie Smalls, Notorious B.I.G. and Hypnotize.
Yeah, exactly. And just to preface, these songs aren't in any logical order.
No, doesn't matter.
It's not a flow, but
it's shuffle. It's on shuffle. It's
exactly,
okay.
Exactly. It's just keeping you on your toes for when you've had to listen to these 7 songs for the 10 years. I think I chose this one just because it's just a great song that is like so groovy, and it just like as soon as you hear it, you want to move. And I think it's one of those songs that, like, no matter where you are, if you're at a party, if you're like walking down the street, if you're in the car by yourself, it's just one that it's at least from my experience, it's a song that everyone just like knows and like is down to groove to. So I think it's a really good song that creates connection just because everyone kind of like recognizes it and feels it. So I think it's a good connector. Plus it's just a great song to move to.
So catchy. I grew up kind of like teenage years in the 90s. So this was big music at the time.
And
I tend to use Apple Music rather than Spotify to listen to stuff. And Apple does this state, it makes it your own personal station now that it's a thing to think you like. That was one of the things that came on mine. So I was like, oh no, this was on the other day when I was listening to it.
I was like, Apple, you know me too well.
Yeah, I know. And there's a few others actually as well, which are quite cool. And then the next one, this actually is a good order because it flows quite
logical
nicely.
Logical choice, yeah.
Bit of Beyonce.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't not have Beyonce. And anyone who knows me knows I'm like a massive Beyonce fan. So I chose Run the World, but specifically her Homecoming Live version. Again, because I do just love live music. And I think it's, and I don't know if this will make sense, but I feel like it just does connect you to your humanity a little bit more. In that you can just kind of envision yourself being there, listening to this live music, like feeling the beats, like as you feel like your body shake as you hear it. So I wanted the live version of this, even though I would honestly take any Beyonce. And I think this song in particular, Run the World, just as a reminder that when men were running the world, things did not go well. So just to reinforce the idea that maybe we need to try something else in terms of our global leadership. So that's my multiple reasons for choosing this song.
I'm up for that. Beyonce ruled the world. that was Coachella, I think, that recording.
Yes.
Have you been to Coachella?
I haven't actually.
No. Oh, I was meant to go one year. Something happened. I couldn't go, but I'd love to go to that. I love Irreplaceable. That's my favorite Beyonce song. I could just listen to that over and over again. I just love that song. And then the next one I absolutely love. I've been learning to play on the piano.
Nice.
So yeah, I bought a piano for my family for their birthday in November. So they're all born in, and my wife's November, my son and my daughter are all November. So I bought them a piano.
Good call.
I'm the one that's been playing it though.
It's really a gift for yourself.
Yeah. So I set myself a challenge that I'm going to play your song by Elton John by Christmas time. I'm going to do it quite well.
I'm going to follow up with you on that.
Well, I'll play for you. We'll meet up at the end of the year.
Yes.
And I'll see how awful it is. but Bill Withers, I love this song. Lovely day.
Me too. And I think it used to be the song that I set as my alarm to wake up every day. And I was like, if there was, how can I best set myself up each day? And it's to start the day with a bit of Bill Withers, especially Lovely Day, and just think through, today is going to be a lovely day. Go into it with a positive attitude. I think it's just like, it's such a nice, positive, happy song. So I imagine if I'm on a deserted island, I'll probably feel quite down a lot of the time. So hopefully this will be a nice reminder of like, okay, we're good. Like, it's going to be a lovely day. We'll get our shit together and we'll figure it out.
Exactly. You can't be a bit of soul music.
Yeah.
I won't ruin the one at the end. There's another great one as well. And then the next one is amazing. It was the NASA recording of Earth Sounds. Was Song of Earth by NASA. Not to be confused with Earth Song by Michael Jackson, which could have made it in. But it's like a half an hour piece, isn't it? I think that they've condensed. But yeah, tell us a bit about that.
Yeah. So I actually first learned about this album that NASA put out, and it's one of their Voyager missions. They have translated, and I really don't know the technical side of it, but they've translated some sort of wavelength into sound, and so they've captured the sound of the different planets. So this is a Song of Earth, and it's I find it's a really interesting one because it at the beginning, at least when I first listened to it, it felt quite ominous. and it's a bit eerie and mysterious. But once you keep going, it is quite soothing, and it can feel like a bit of like a sound bath, where at some point it just like you kind of surrender to it and it does feel quite calming. So I think I wanted to choose this because of those reasons, that I think it can be quite meditative and quite calming and soothing. Also, it's 30 minutes long, so like that's a good amount. That's a good kind of use of time if you have nothing else to do. But as well as a little bit of a reminder that we are a whole Earth, a whole planet. We're just like swarming around in this solar system, again, to kind of get ourselves out of our own heads and our individual small problems and just be like, okay, we're something small and something much bigger. So just having that as a bit of a reminder as well.
It's like, do you like sci-fi movies?
I do.
Just like Interstellar, you know, the music for that's so powerful, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. Yeah, one and like that.
That song gets me every time, like well up that part of the movie. But there's that one bit in Interstellar where they're just coming away from Earth and they're going like as quick as they can, and they're all in the back of their seats, and it follows it from a distance. It's just a speck moving so slowly in the context of everything. And it's like things like that, just little observations, I think, that and sounds like this. Like I was thinking this would be great for like a bit of yoga, wouldn't it, in the background song of
Earth. So I actually learned about this album when I was doing my yoga teacher training. Someone who I was doing it with had put this on and included it as one of their songs as we went through a flow. And I was like, this is just, it's amazing. Like it is very, very, very kind of calming, but as well as it can be quite profound. And I think to your point, it does make you kind of change lens from you being your world and like everything that's happening to you feeling so all-encompassing, to really like zooming out and being like, I'm actually not the world. There's so much going on. I'm quite small. So I think also helps kind of sometimes put things in perspective.
I agree. It's a contextualization thing. I think when I've had kind of hard times personally in the past, I learned transcendental meditation and got into that. And just thinking through that and reading about some of these things just puts things in context. Like, you know, my problems actually in the scheme of things I'm incredibly lucky and privileged in all this. It doesn't mean that you're wrong for having these feelings or feeling like you
for
do.
Sure.
You're just going to learn to kind of work with it and move forward. But it does, just starting to ask those questions is absolutely key as well. And then the third one, the Sigur Rós. I can't do the Icelandic pronunciation, but again, this is a beautiful song, isn't it? Untitled number three.
Yeah, and I was going through like all my previously saved playlists to know like, okay, what are the things that I always listen to? And this song is almost on every one of the playlists that I've made for teaching yoga classes. Again, it's just another really beautiful piece of music. It just, I think, would be a good reminder of my yogic ways. It would help me prompt to do some yoga and to chill out as I'm panicking, figuring out how I'm going to survive. That's kind of the more simple explanation for that choice.
That's a great, it's a beautiful song. And finally, I love this song so much. Marvin Gaye, Let's Get It On.
I think it has to go. Yeah. It has to be in there. I think this is, if I had to pick one song, this might be the one. It just like, it is so soulful. It's so groovy. It just like is such a feel good song. And I think you can kind of look at it from a couple ways, and covers my spirituality, sexuality, and sustainability kind of focus areas of, you know, we got to get on with it. We got to keep moving forward. But also, why not do it in a way that is really fun and pleasurable?
Because there's like Al Green songs that are a bit like, if you like Al Green and Curtis Mayfield, but I like Marvin Gaye. I love those kind of, and Otis Redding's my ultimate all-time favorite from a soul, but I love listening to Marvin Gaye.
Yeah, I mean, bring all those guys along to this desert
island. Can come.
Yeah,
they should be there. That's my festival lineup right there.
Yeah.
with a bit of David Bowie. That's the one I was I know that's not there, but for me, I've always wanted to see him, and then
maybe in a hologram.
Even in a hologram form, that's the point. So then the next bit is what I always find quite interesting is the box set choice.
Yes.
As well. So
again,
you've got a couple of choices. I'll let you have both.
Okay, thank you. I couldn't I couldn't decide. So maybe you can help me figure out which is actually the best option. But the first one is the Planet Earth series. That was on the BBC, and I know there's been a couple of them. I think that one I wanted to choose because, say we are in, you know, the apocalyptic version of the world, to have it as a reminder of how magical and like beautiful the planet was or is, and then hopefully provides a bit of incentive, like, to keep working to bring it back to that place where it is just like flourishing and thriving. I think as well, if for entertainment, like, it can be quite dramatic. You can learn about relationships and how different animals and systems interact. So I think also that it has a lot of entertainment value as well, if I'm bored with not much else to do.
And I think that theme of kind of documentary is a lot of the reason we are where we are now. The interest around sustainability, you know, it captured a lot of people's kind of hearts and imaginations kind of two, three years ago, really, didn't it, around the ocean plastics and so on. So
exactly.
It's hugely significant. And I don't know if I would have done my degree if I wasn't watching animal programs on TV for David Attenborough. So, that's a great choice. So that's fine. We could take that. That's our kind of fact documentary stuff. So that's good.
Our fact one. And then my other choice was the Lost series by J.J. Abrams for a couple of reasons. One, again, to start off with the entertainment side of things. So I watched Lost years and years ago, but it was the only series where I would be late for things so that I could finish watching Lost. So I think that for me was just like, okay, that was probably it was a really compelling series. So if I needed something very entertaining, that was a good one for me. And then on the more practical side of things, you know, they're lost. They're on a desert island. So maybe they would provide me some inspiration and some ideas. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that was my Lost choice.
I loved Lost the first kind of season or two, but then I did lose it a bit.
Fade away.
Me.
Yeah.
It lost it for me. Yeah. But, unfortunately. But that is one of the classics, isn't it, of that new box set genre that we all got into. Like I always go to 24. I think
it
was very difficult to beat, but and there's so many of them as well. It's like, how can we go for a
take
while?
Take your pick, yeah.
take all those. That's brilliant. So yeah, I think more than welcome to have both of those with you.
Okay, thank you.
One in my backpack, no problem. And then the gadget. So the gadget is good.
I'm glad. I'm glad you thought that. So my gadget was or is a vibrator, because, you know, if there's not much else to do, why not feel good whilst you're, you know, in all the doom and gloom? There's so many benefits to pleasure and orgasms. So hopefully, it would make me more productive. It would help connect me to my human animal side of things, so maybe would inspire me to get into my like survival bits and bobs. And then if the world's gone to shit, might as well have an orgasm.
Yeah. Well, you're not necessarily alone in this world. There could be other people.
I didn't have that context, so I thought I was here by myself.
I think even if you did, it's probably a sensible thing to have, right?
Yeah, exactly. Regardless. I mean, as long as we have cleaning supplies, happy to, you know, support other people who need a bit of joy.
A circular economy model around that. Yeah, there's something, a lease model in this not in COVID times, obviously, you know, we have to wear a mask. Obviously.
Yeah.
that's fantastic. No, completely. So just remind us again of the podcast as well.
Yes. So you can find us on Apple and on Spotify. I think a couple other places as well, but I think those are people's go-tos. But it's called Crystals, Clits, and Climate. We just kicked off our third season. We've had some amazing speakers, amazing conversations so far. Again, all in the realm of exploring spirituality, sexuality, and sustainability. And much more exciting stuff to come in this season.
Excellent. Oh, well, I think we'll all be checking that out. That's all
great.
and just to kind of sign off, so with what we do at Rio, education is like fundamental to this whole thing, and engagement on these issues. So This is a great medium for people to learn about this stuff as well. But if you were to give anybody, kind of any organization, kind of a couple of pearls of wisdom around what they can do to be more sustainable or help their journey, what would that be?
Oh, that is a good question and a tough one. Can I answer a few things? A few pills.
Go for it. Yeah, it doesn't have to be one.
Yeah, I think one is obviously one that we've been talking about quite a bit in our conversation so far. So that idea of systems thinking, of kind of looking at what's the wider impact that you can have. So not just looking at your own impact, your own emissions, but how are you kind of creating change more broadly as well? How are you actively being a citizen or an organization in this interconnected world that we live in? And how can we, I guess, feel more responsible for our wider impact and influence that we can have. So I think that's one bit and kind of goes back to the footprint, brain print conversation we've been having. And I guess kind of paired with that is the need to have critical awareness and to critically think about the world that we live in, to critically think about our role in it and the type of role that we want to have and the type of individual or citizen or organization that we want to be. And just really becoming present to that and acknowledging that, I think is a good one. Because I think we have a lot of work to do and it can be so much easier to opt out. But that's not really a choice. We can't opt out. We're here. We're all operating in this world. So how can we make sure we are being really mindful of what our role is and the impact and influence we have, and as well as the larger systems and structures that we are a part of? And do we want to continue to be a part of them, or do we want to try something else and offer a different way of operating, or new solutions and a new way of doing things? And then I also think connected to that, and probably what you'll notice from my systems thinking perspective, I'm always trying to like connect the dots. But I think getting a diverse range of perspectives when creating solutions, when trying to understand problems is so crucial. And this kind of goes back to what we were talking about, the importance of diversity and inclusion, is if only one type of perspective is creating solutions for everyone, if they're the ones who are driving how our society runs and operates, then it's only really going to be built in a way that best serves that same type of person or same or similar kind of identity. So how can we be more inclusive in making sure that we acknowledge kind of the perspective that we are coming from, and how can we really openly hear the perspective and experience of someone else who's having a completely different experience, and kind of create solutions together from that place of mutual respect and understanding.
Yeah, absolutely. I think consultation, stakeholder engagement, all those things are absolutely critical in this. But yeah, absolutely agree. Look, Hannah, it's been amazing talking to you. So just a reminder to everybody that Hannah's playlist for 7 songs are on Apple Music and Spotify, and we'll share all the links so you can get to those. Have listened, do some yoga. Definitely.
Yes. That's do some yoga, go masturbate, go consider what your environmental and social impact is.
Exactly. Is that in that order, or you can switch it up a bit, whatever you fancy.
But, all at the same time.
But thanks so much, Hannah. It's been lovely seeing you.
So nice to meet you, Dan. Thanks so much for having me.
Okay, bye.
Bye.